Namaste. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to share briefly about silence being the nature of the self, and then we can open up the talk to any sharing or questions you may have. You see, on one's spiritual journey, whatever it may be, any path that one is following, one measure to know whether the teachings have been imbibed, have impacted my daily living, is by the quality of silence. Now, by this is meant an absence of the thinking mind of the ego. When it is clear to us that our thinking mind is no longer involved in certain thought processes based on doership, based on the dead past, and based on an imaginary future. When the thinking mind is not indulging in all this, that is the silence being referred to. So one can take the classic spiritual example of the cinema screen and the movie being played on it. So when I am less and less involved in the drama and story of my life, the awareness that life is being played out on the screen of consciousness. This awareness becomes heightened. That screen of consciousness is silent. One could call it pure being. One could call it conscious presence. One could call it the now. So imagine if we have been reading books all our lives, the words, understanding them, imbibing them, but not realizing that what enables the words to be is the space behind them. That is the silence being referred to. So when you see that your life, whatever has gone by of it, there has always been something you could say which has registered what has happened in my life. This happened 20 years ago. This happened 10 years ago. That which is aware of the happenings has never left me. That constant witness has been always present. But because I got sucked into the drama of life and living and a drama based on me and my story, which in turn is based on doership, you could say I lost awareness of this witnessing consciousness. Now, let's make no mistake. The witnessing consciousness is always ever present and will be there till our last breath. But the ego, steeped in ignorance, loses contact with that. And wisdom teachings help re-establish contact with that. Wisdom teachings which impact one. And that is why the only measure is peace of mind in daily living. Now, some masters say peace of mind. Some say there is no such thing as peace of mind because the mind is never peaceful. Appears to be a contradiction. Yet, these are just approaches and words pointing to the silence of the thinking mind. For example, when it is recognized that my mind is turbulent, then it is clear that there is something seemingly apart from the mind which has recognized that. Then the awareness is, oh, this is the mind playing out its antics. It is the nature of the mind. The sanskaras and vasanas come up. Yet that awareness prevents me from going into action-reaction loops unconsciously like I used to before. That which keeps perpetuating the cycle of time, the cycle of karma, reincarnating into the same situations with the same people again and again and again and again. So peace of mind means that that activity of the ego with its identifications, this is me, this is who I am, me and my story, what you did this to me, she did this to me, blame, condemnation, ill will, on and on and on and on is finished. So whether it is peace of mind, whether the recognition is that the mind can never be at peace, the dialogue of the mind is what is burnt to ash. That is why they say, as even Maharaj said, be very careful when you come onto the spiritual journey, because it will burn your house down. All that you thought was you, your beliefs, your views, opinions, judgments, are now questioned by yourself, looked at. What you held so precious and so dear earlier, you realize is like a house of cards, simply because the understanding has happened that whatever I say, whatever I do, is based on factors beyond my control. Firstly, to be alive and to breathe with blood coursing through the veins was not in my control. All my conditioning from day one, not in my control, on the basis of which I say things and I do things. So now it is clear to me that my view is a point of view. It is not the truth. It is based on my filters. Similarly, the person across me is expressing a point of view equally valid as mine. So certainly that truth does not depend on a point of view. The truth is the impersonal awareness of being, which is enabling me to express my point of view and also enabling someone else to express their point of view. This recognition of the truth, the conscious presence which allows one person to talk and the other person to listen, is Sukha Shanti, the happiness of peace, the peace that passeth understanding. Now, the mind can never be at peace. What does that mean? Simply this, that a movie, in order for the movie to be seen, it must be projected on a blank screen. A movie cannot be projected on another movie. It will just be noise. So the mind, the movie itself, cannot be at peace in this sense. Therefore, when the thinking mind is dissolved by and by bit, then the identification with my story is dissolved. Then I start resting more and more in what is referred to as Sakshi Bhav, witness consciousness. You see, the living dream of life is very alluring for one reason. Why are we not attached to the dreams we have? Because when we wake up, they are irrelevant. Whether I have seen a fearful situation in my dream, a happy situation, it's gone. But this living dream of life has the quality of continuity to it. I wake up into the same job, same family, and so on. And this continuity is what makes it appear to be real. But the fact is that in the deep sleep state, both the dream world and the waking world don't exist. So how could it be that the waking world is more solid than the dream world? That is the Maya. And that Maya is perpetuated by the ego with its sense of doership. That is why the briefest description of Maya was when Siddharameshwar Maharaj said, Maya is me. I could not find a better definition of Maya than that. Yes, to understand that statement better, one could say, Maya is me with the sense of personal doership. All right. If anyone would like to share something or ask a question, you're welcome to now. Yes, sir.
Namaskar.
Namaste. It's good to start with Ganesh, isn't it?
Namaskar, Guruji. So, I have two questions. The first question is, you said, Maya is me. Like Siddharameshwar Maharaj said, Maya is me, which is a sense of personal doership. So the sense of recognition of Maya is, you know, by that logic, is also Maya, right? In that sense. If the recognition of Maya is also Maya, if that is the case, then the pure witness can also be Maya. Like am I making any fault in the love? That's my question going.
Is your question that the pure witness is the Maya? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, that is it also Maya?
How can it be? Look, when we are born, we are not born with the ego. The ego develops after about a year or so when the baby begins to feel separate from what it sees, hears, tastes, smells, and touch. For example, the recognition is that when crying happens, someone comes running. These are when the seeds of doership are born, the separation. Now, this, of course, is also the will of God. The creation of the ego, the feeling of being separate from source consciousness, is also part of it. But that which is prior to the ego, the Baal Krishna, the child consciousness, the pure being, that is not the Maya. So, Maya is me, which means the ego, which considers itself as a separate entity and identified with the name and form. That is the Maya. And the same source consciousness, in some cases, out of the billions of people on the planet, begins the process of inquiry when those people are gifted with trying to understand, is life all about this world that I see? Can I derive constant happiness from this world that I'm born into? Or is there something else which is where my true peace and happiness lies? That spiritual journey, that gift of the spiritual journey, which has been given, is for those egos to reverse back in that sense to their true being. That is what happens. If I am thinking that even witnessing is Maya, who is saying that? It is the mind. The movie is trying to play another movie on the first movie. You see, that is the nature of the mind. I cannot conceive that I am absent in the deep sleep state. Yet I know it because I wake up the next morning. So that presence in deep sleep does not vacate its position in the waking state. Would you say that is also Maya? When Ramana Maharshi said, deep sleep is your natural state, what was he pointing to? Yes, he was pointing to that eternal self in which deep sleep, dream, and waking appear, no doubt. But this witnessing consciousness, which is where our attitude to what happens in our lives rests, which enables us to respond instead of react. When we react, mostly we are blindsided by the event happening because we are on autopilot with all our conditionings and filters in place. And we are repeating that story again and again and again. When we find that is no longer happening to the degree it was, then I think one could say, in all fairness, that the grip that the Maya had on me is lessening. Is releasing. All right.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes, Artha.
Master Gautam ji, how have you been?
I am good. Thank you.
So let me see how I tackle this question. So I usually hesitate to use spiritual concepts to describe whatever my personal experience is happening, but I had a question relating to that. So the thinking mind is mostly inactive. The working mind is functioning in terms of, anything that needs tending to when it arises, the working mind starts functioning adequately. It also functions in form of a creative expression when I try to come up with stories, my fictional stories. So it just, I don't know, starts functioning on its own. There's no second guessing. There's no censorship or selectivity in terms of what I need to write and what I don't need to write. The editing happens later, which is a relief for me because I used to second guess myself a lot while doing anything creative or even just performing day-to-day functions in my daily living. So these two things are happening, and there's mostly silence during the day and also the night sometimes, but sometimes I find like The silence, in the silence, there is this potential of a question, you know? And that was my question for today. This silence being the question itself.
Firstly, you're looking a bit like Gujref, I think. I remember
I
photo of his with that hat.
was trying to pull off like a Kashmiri out like look today. This is the Kara cooler, belongs to my grandfather, but yeah, that's a great reference.
Nice. Your thing of second guessing oneself reminds me of one song by Enya. It's called Anywhere Is, and the lyrics are something like this. It's either this way or that way, one way or the other, could be the beginning, could be the end. You must look up the lyrics.
I will.
That is what we are doing all the time in the day, you know. See, silence is the field of potential, no doubt. As my teacher would say, the unmanifest source was not dead matter, it was pure potential. And that potential was waiting to activize itself, which becomes the manifest world as we know it. So, indeed, you are right that the silence is the field of pure potentiality in which questions can arise. Everything arises from silence, every sound arises from silence and disappears into silence. So that is absolutely correct what you are saying. And because of the nature of the mind being what it is, questions will arise. However, I feel that in silence, for example, in meditation, it is a common experience in those who meditate that they get answers to questions during the meditation. This is because in the waking state, our thinking mind is already running and we are trying to get answers to questions. In silence, in the silence of meditation, the answers emerge because they have been given the space, the potential has been created for the answers to come. And so, questions which arise in silence, I feel, are most likely more worthy questions than those which arise in the mundane waking state where already our mind is running all over the place. That is my feeling.
100%. I mean, I get a lot of creative answers to my questions, whether they be related to like writing or just like anything like relationship advice. It's really strange.
Oh.
But you know, I guess maybe that's also the play of the mind trying to like silence the silence itself. So yeah, that needs to be looked at for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you for the answer. Yeah, that clarifies a lot of things that I was pondering over.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Sadhana. Yes, Suresh.
Hariom Gautam ji.
I think we tried speaking last time and the connection was not good. Am I right?
That is correct. That is correct. And I was able to follow the rest of the lecture in YouTube. So always a pleasure. My question today is linked to the aspect of just the being versus the becoming, and how to put my current state of progress and, you know, evaluate if I'm going in the right direction. A decade ago, when I started my spiritual journey, I should say I shouldn't. I should say I didn't start. Then there's a sense of doership
It's okay.
in
It's okay to use words which we are
it.
conditioned to. Let's not be so hard on ourselves.
So, in that, you know, I was focused on reading scriptures. I took initiation into Kriya Yoga, practice meditation. So there was a variety of practices, which I assume is the path of becoming, where you're undertaking steps towards, you know, cleansing yourself and you know, going into a higher dimension, so to speak. But after many years of that, I'm becoming very comfortable actually not doing any of that and just simply resting. And you know, the sense of like, you know, not looking for an object, but if I am the self ultimately, then I should rest on it. And I'm getting comfortable with that concept and being able to be established in it during the whole day with help of japa. So anytime, anytime I really don't have anything to do, I automatically, chant my mantra of my beloved God, and that has helped me kind of bring back this essence of awareness. And I've gotten too comfortable with it. And in general, my reactions to the outside world are becoming more neutral. I'm not necessarily saddened or angry, and at the same time, not jumping as well. So there's this little bit of doubt that I have is this heading in the right direction? And how do I evaluate? It is becoming a more focused on the being as opposed to becoming. And as you rightly said, the peace that is there to stay, I'm getting comfortable with it. So there are a few people who are asking me questions and I'm answering, and I'm hoping that I'm not misguiding them. So I just wanted to evaluate your, get your evaluation of this state and how to, assess it against my own goals as such, if that makes sense.
Sure. So there are some aspects to this. One is for you, what you've resonated with is japa. That's clearly working. So you flow with it. Now, for someone else who, let's say, was initiated into Kriya Yoga at one point, that practice may drop off, or they know the Kriya has health benefits which they have derived, and they may still continue that practice. So it is indeed different strokes for different folks. But now, what has happened is a recognition has happened where your peace is to be found, and that is in resting in the self, as you have said. So that becomes priority. For someone else, all other practices may drop off, including japa, including yoga, whatever it is. We don't know because everyone comes with their own destiny. The main thing is any practice that we are doing, whether it is japa or kriya yoga or whatever, or even resting and being, is any of these practices taking away my peace? And I'm just doing it with a potential outcome in mind, but I'm suffering the practice. I'm forcing myself to do it. Or am I enjoying doing it? You see? So if all this has been clarified for you, then you are following the natural flow of your spiritual journey. Because there's one measure. Where is my peace to be found? What is it which is helping me engage with the world? Because this is why the Buddha's middle path is so important. This is why the parampara of householder gurus is so important. Because relationships cannot happen in a cave when I'm sitting alone. That is a particular yogic way, which is very different from what we are discussing. So, through the manifest world, through relationships with people, through relationships with what happens in my life, my relationship, how do I relate to a happening in my life, and ultimately my relationship with myself, is my peace to be found here? And so, if you already know the answer to that, one could say you are in a very safe place. Now, my own experience with japa, mantra chanting, was that even when I found that I was doing it consciously, the thought for the mantra to start was not mine. And I'm speaking on behalf of everyone, I think. We think, okay, we are going to start this japa now. But actually, what has happened is, let's say you're going for a walk, and let's say the japa is Om Namah Shivaya. And you say, I'm going to start doing Om Namah Shivaya. Even that thought is not ours. But then we take ownership of it and make it into this practice which we claim. And that is why those who have chanted a lot of japa will reach a stage where they find that it is the natural rhythm, the ajapa jap has begun. It's just going on and on constantly and constantly. Only the awareness is there now that the japa is happening. So while it appears I'm doing japa, my understanding is that is still just an appearance, because from the first point on, if it is destined to be doing japa, japa will happen. And at some point, it may stop. We don't know.
It is so rightly put, because I'm feeling that, you know, the aspect of just resting on my being is rising up, ascending, and my japas is coming to a lower. The heat is not still completely gone, but this is gaining more prominence.
Yes.
And to your point about doership, to your point about relationships, I think that is a yardstick which I also adopt. You know, how I am, you know, relating to the whole world and to myself, which is a great thing that you said, and I need to keep that, you know, constantly on the back of my mind. So thank you so much for the clarity. And I am really looking forward to meeting you soon in Thiruvannamalai.
Oh, wonderful. I'm also looking forward.
And there was one lecture which you mentioned, where your teacher Ramesh said, you know, you think you're doing this trip, but then the whole universe has to conspire for everything to come together. So I pray for a safe coming to your retreat, and I'm looking forward to the sessions with you. Thank you.
Well, please pray for me too.
Yes, will do.
You know, I don't know why I'm reminded of this. There's no direct connection, but these things come up. I was reading how Ramana Maharshi was getting his legs massaged because he had arthritis issues. So, you know, his devotees would constantly be massaging his legs with oil. And then he heard the buzz that they were all vying amongst each other to be the ones to massage so they could get all the punya, you see. Yes, maybe I thought of it because after all, Arunachala and he are the same. And so one day, when someone came forward to massage Bhagwan's legs, he stopped them and he started massaging them himself. So they said, Bhagwan, please don't do that. We are there for you. He said, why? Please allow me also to get some punya for
Totally,
myself.
totally.
Sense of humor is so important on the spiritual path. We tend to become very serious.
Yes.
We
Thank
really take things too seriously, and we need to lighten up, have fun, make jokes,
very
and
nice.
it helps. Humor helps deal with some very hard situations. Okay, thank you. Yes, Rahul.
Am I audible, Guruji?
Yes.
Namaste, Guruji. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to ask the question. So, in our last meeting, I had asked you regarding my meditation practice. So, I remember you told me that I told you that the blank space, the black space which I see. So, you told me be there, stay with that thing. So, I did exactly what you told me, and like there was a moment where the thing which I'm seeing in front of me, the blackness, I could experience myself that I am watching it, and that I am there was just an experience of it, but I could not see myself, like how we see the black space, how we see the objects. I could not see myself, but I was there. So I could experience that I was there, and it is, I am watching. So I cannot see myself. I cannot turn myself and see it, but I could detach myself from that blackness. So I was there, and that moment was for like few seconds, I would say. Then like I opened my eyes, I was living, everything was normal. Then like when I tried like this self-inquiry, so as Ramana Maharishi says, when whatever things we experience, ask to whom it is happening. So I kind of go in a regression where I see things like outside of myself. I think that how much should I go back? and where it stops. It is like becoming a too much regression, too many things. This is experiencing this, this is experiencing this, this is experiencing that. So there is no end point which is coming. So just wanted to clarify this thing that what do you suggest that what should I do now?
That end point has already been tasted by you, that blackness which you mentioned in meditation, and you said there is no I am seeing it, means although you feel that because the conditioning of the me is so strong, that which is aware of the blackness is prior to the blackness. So that has already been tasted by you. Please understand this. This blackness which you reached, there was awareness of that also. What is that? There's nothing further. That is the ultimate regression. So you could say you have been given a gift of that. So if constant regression is taking you away from peace and probably impinging on your daily life, my suggestion would be there's no need in your case to continue going on and on about it. I may not say the same thing to someone else, but because that experience has happened to you, that recognition that there was something prior to the blackness is where the resting will happen on its own. But sometimes the mind just wants to keep working on something, you know, and so it gets stuck in a loop. Yes, that is the sadhana of self-inquiry. Any thought which comes, go back. Who knows this? Go back. Who knows this? To what end? That it will dissolve the questioner, the one who is asking, who am I? So go with what has happened naturally, spontaneously. Don't trip on wires. Don't get caught up with the practice. Make sure that it is not disturbing your way of living and being. And just trust that that same source which has taken you thus far will do the rest of the job. It doesn't really need too much of your help.
Guruji, one more thing I wanted to ask you.
Yes.
So for example, the sensation which we feel in the body, so sensation of heat or cold, for example, we'll take heat example. So this background which we talk about, which was prior to this experience, so does it has the ability to experience that thing? Experience in the sense, because heat and cold are two different kind of sensations. If I'm able to experience heat and there is coldness, so both sensations are different from each other. Similarly, light, pain, pleasure, so every sensation different. So this background and this consciousness which we talk about, so this consciousness, is it intelligent to identify that this is coldness, this is hotness, or it is mind experiencing that thing? So I get confused that background, am I seeing it from the mind perspective, or is it the consciousness seeing the sensation? So this was the question, Guruji.
You see, cold and hot are polarities. We live in a dualistic world which will have polarities of every conceivable kind. Up and down, left and right, front and back, big and small, rich and poor, pleasure and pain, good and evil, hot and cold. This is the structure of life and living. We have been born into the realm of duality of every conceivable kind. Now, someone who is able to see this because of this awareness, because of the Sakshi Bhav, heat is seen for what it is, cold is seen for what it is. These are sensations which arise in the body. But because the mind, and it's a very nice question you have asked, ultimately everything is in the mind, one could say. Even the frame of duality is in the mind only. But when it is recognized that these are the polaric opposites at play, that recognition, for example, the sage may still feel heat and cold. He's bound to because he is in the body, in the flesh. But it will not disturb him to the extent that it will disturb a normal person. Why? Because the sage is resting in being, physical discomfort will be seen for what it is, and steps will be taken to mitigate that discomfort. But because the sage is not lost in that story, which is the thinking mind of the ego, which gets lost in that story, it is quite clear that extremes have lesser bearing on the sage. So one does not get thrown off too much by the polaric opposites. See, everything is perceived through the mind. That has to happen. That is why the mind has been gifted to us. Okay, yet at the same time, you put someone who has lost their memory into the snow, they are going to feel cold, right? So the point is that this internal stillness, which the sage has tapped into, which is not the quality of the mind, as I repeatedly say, is what enables the sage to see the polarities operating while we get lost between two polarities. For example, we lose money, we want to make money. You see, we are always shuttling between these two polarities in daily living. That sage rests in being, allowing what, as Bhagwan said, divine activity to sort out the situation. I have read this. It's a very beautiful expression. It is the divine activity which is allowed by the sage, whereas the individual me starts thinking of solutions to get out of situations. That divine activity is not the mind as you and me know it. But when I find in my own life that the dualities of life are no longer gripping me like they used to, then I know I am resting more and more in being and less in the mind. My own experience. I don't need someone else to say that. I have to ask myself these questions. All right?
Thank you, Guruji.
Thank you.
Hello,
Yes, Rupal.
namaste.
Namaste.
I was after the first satsang, I got this inner clarity, the message to work few months on the silent meditation of the Aurobindo, which we all follow. Like, and very grateful to have met Santosh Ma. So today, like I was doing my meditation and some book audio book was playing, and I woke up listening to it about self-love, and I just saw on my WhatsApp a person with hemophilia writing about self-love, and that was like getting an inner message that what was missing on the path was even though you have a medical problem, there is a need for a lot of self-love, self-healing. And actually, I used to believe that I could heal myself, but somehow the medical things and the things around me would always say, no, it's difficult, or you let go of this desire also to be healed. But what I could understand or become aware was that this self-love was something which was missing. Though that message was coming to me in a subtle way from two or three ways, this became very clear after my meditation when I looked at it and I reflected upon it. And I think the more peaceful I get into things, so one of the things which I did on my peace meditation was as the force descent from above, I also looked at that the whole force of the ocean, I am the part of that whole ocean of the peace itself, which is controlled by the force itself, and I am moving with that. And I felt very peaceful about it. And this is what I wanted to share. I now understand that what is the path which I'm following, what is the path I will be following again for something like that. And I now have this, that I now have developing more and more faith in you.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. You know, this self-love is a curious thing. When we talk of self-love with the S being lowercase, which is loving myself, my teacher would say when we accept that all our qualities, all our traits were not created by us, all the flaws and imperfections we tend to find in ourselves, when we recognize that God, consciousness, source, energy, whatever you call it, gifted this body-mind organism with a set of experiences from birth, a certain set of parents belonging to a certain income group in a certain geographical location, sending us to a certain school, and so on and so forth. All these circumstances made me who I am. And I started judging myself. When I see that God shaped me the way I am, including all my defects and flaws, which I think are defects and flaws, then this total acceptance of the way I am, when I drop ownership of that this I am responsible for, that is self-love. Now, when I take it a step further, and we are talking about the big S, self-love, when I see that everyone is that, everyone in my life, the ones I love, the ones I don't love, the ones I hate, are all conditioned beings based on their genetics, circumstances, situations, nature, and so on and so forth. Then that big S starts getting recognized as the hand of the one behind the many. Then that is now my relationship is with the big S, because there is only one appearing as the many. That one appearing as you and me being two polarities in this dualistic framework, which became you versus me through the ego with its sense of doership. And so when this you versus me shifts back to you and me, and I see that by and by I have this felt, this quality of felt oneness with being with everyone, even those who harm me. I can feel perhaps some smidgen of compassion that God knows what they went through in their childhood, which made them do and say certain things. Then one is tapping into the big S, self-love. Now, when it comes to healing, I was quite inspired by the American mystic Joel Goldsmith. He was a healer, and I found his teachings and his philosophy of healing based on Advaita. Because the foundation was for his healing practice, give up the belief in two powers. There is no power apart from God. And that itself produces the healing. At least the thinking mind is healed when we start seeing things from this point of view, that the hand of God is above all. And by, as he would say, when we learn not to love, hate, or fear error, that is when healing takes place. I don't want to get in too much into this, but his modality of healing was very beautiful. It was not about healing a patient. You see, he was very clear that if a patient came to him with a problem, it was impinging his own consciousness. Someone with a name and form has come before him and placed an ailment before him. Where is it appearing? Within his own consciousness. And as he would say, that is where the error had to be dissolved, in his consciousness, not in the patient's. That resting in the infinite invisible is what produced the healing, as he said. Why? Because the consciousness of the patient is not different from the consciousness of Joel Goldsmith. There is only one consciousness. So I've just given you a taste of the essence of his approach, but I find it pure Advaita in terms of action. Okay?
Yeah, thank you very much. So it's similar to what the same concept I was using through Ho'oponopono, that why did this consciousness arise in me, in letting it go in that way. But it adds to a deeper dimension to work on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and that's very beautiful to visualize. I mean, so many wisdom teachings, the descent of light, the descent of peace. These are beautiful techniques. I mean, I think a lot of Sri Aurobindo's and the mother's work is resting on that. And I also found it very beautiful, extremely beautiful.
I also found that what the mother did on the cellular level, as I look at it,
Yes.
and I mean, I'm looking at other things, that why this healings is happening among collectively also I look at it. And I felt that it was the work of the mother.
Well said, well said. It is, Rupal, the mother is the divine mother. The Shakti, the pure consciousness. Whose else's work will it be? Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Yes, Zoe. I can't
Hello.
hear you. Yes, hello.
Namaste. Nice to finally meet you. I've watched your videos several years ago, and I haven't been on them for several years because I felt like my path, I was in the space that I needed to be, and I was living life, and I was resting in my awareness, and I was in I felt at peace. But the reason I'm reaching out as I feel now is I've had a tragedy in my life that has brought me out of that peace, and it's very hard, and I just don't know how to find it again. And I think you did help me answer it before when you said that sometimes maybe I have to recognize it. This is the pain, and I have to go through it. And maybe like the hot and cold, recognize it. Eventually, maybe I can find my way back. But the thing is, it's a tragedy. My daughter, she was 13. She committed suicide, and unfortunately, the circumstances around it mean that there's going to be legal court cases, and I'm all in my mind constantly. So that peaceful silence and awareness I had at the moment is just shattered.
Yes, Zoe, I'm very sorry to hear about this. I think no one can know the loss of a child than a parent. Now, saying anything on the subject would be putting salt on an open wound. But, and of course, the mind is going to be consumed by sorting out the situation, which is bound to take away the peace. It is an extreme situation you have described. Now, where does my consolation lie? My consolation lies in knowing this happened because it was destined to happen. Otherwise, it would not have happened. Tremendous pain arises. Is this my destiny? Is this God's will? Well, it is because it happened. So now I have to deal with the pain. Even a sage may have a child dying by suicide. The sage will also have to deal with the pain. We are all assigned pain and pleasures in our lives. There's no escaping that. What in Hinduism is referred to as prarabdha karma. But with the wisdom teaching of Advaita, that pain does not get extended in the duration of time, creating psychological suffering for myself. That is the only difference. That is the only change. It cannot take away your pain, but that pain which becomes torture because of mental torture, that it can take away, hard as it may sound. And then I am left to deal with the situation, deal with my grief, deal with the legalities of it all. Certainly, I'm not going to find my peace, but at least what is happening is I'm not getting lost in a whirlpool of depression. That is the only gift the teaching can offer. And I don't think it's a small gift. I really don't think it's a small gift. So, my only suggestion would be to hold on to these precious teachings because this event in life you were meant to face, Zoe, how brutal it sounds and harsh it sounds, no doubt. A lot of things in life don't make sense. Senseless killings, senseless suicides, they don't make sense to us. We cannot really understand God's will. The puny human intellect cannot understand the divine will, the cosmic laws of creation. So, step by step, day by day, hour by hour, facing pain, doing my best. If I have to get involved in paperwork, in speaking to people, being there, and just allowing things to take their course. That is it. That is all I have to offer you.
Thank you. I know. I understand. I do feel that this is a path I have been given, and I
Yeah.
know that I'm going to do what I need to do, the doing until I can't anymore, and then accept it.
And where are you
That's
based?
in New Zealand.
New Zealand. Okay. Take care, Zoe.
Thank you so much.
Take care. One last question. Yes, Anupam.
Namaskar, Guruji.
Namaste.
Actually, my question is, everyone says that this world is not real, as you said, just like a dream. So how the karma or the action is really important then?
Have you read any of my books or seen the other videos?
No, sir.
So what brings you to the Zoom?
One of my friend has, invited me. Actually, he has sent me the link and
Right.
suggested me to listen to you.
Okay, so perhaps if you get a bit more familiar with what I speak about, it would help get some understanding of these core concepts. But in a nutshell, I would just like to say that we are living in the manifest world. Can we tell someone like Zoe that this is all unreal?
No, we cannot.
Everything is relative. What does it mean? The manifest world is a reflection of the source within itself, not apart from it. We take the manifest world to be the only reality, whereas the manifest world is an appearance within source. So this statement, what you have made, is a pointer to that. I still have to function in the manifest world as an individual with a body-mind organism, with name and form identified as a separate entity. In that sense, it is real. But the sage knows, because the sage has tapped into this one unifying principle behind the manifest world, that the manifest world is an appearance of the source within itself. So, for example, if I stand before a mirror, I see the reflection. Without me, will I be able to see the reflection? So the reflection is taken for reality by the general public, so to speak, because we are lost in that image. The sage knows that the reflection is not the reality in that sense. So I wouldn't want to go further into this because it can be a very long discussion and we are at the end of our time. But if it interests you, if you feel these teachings will appeal to you, then by all means, pursue them as long as you enjoy that pursuit.
Sure, sir. Sure. Why not? Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. We'll just sit in silence for a couple of minutes. Thank you.